Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. This hour, we're talking about Ta-Nehisi Coates' latest work, an article which is the cover story in the October issue of The Atlantic, The Black Family in the Age of Mass Incarceration. Those of you who called in a moment ago, please call back at 410-319-8888. I want to get you in this half hour of this discussion we're having about Ta-Nehisi's article and that works for Rond and the others. Please do join us again. I want to hear what you had to say at 410-319-8888. We're here with Adar Ayira, project manager of the More in the Middle campaign for Associated Black Charities, facilitator and analyst at the Baltimore Racial Justice Action, a program of fusion partnerships. Lena McAllister, Republican strategist, former candidate for Congress, host of Night Talk, Get to the Point on Pittsburgh Cable News Channel, and Get Right with Lena McAllister on News Radio 1020 KDKA in Pittsburgh. And Adara and Lenny, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good
Thanks
morning.
For having me, Mark.
Always good to have you with us, Lenny. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Really join us. I want to hear what you have to say. And if you have not read the article yet, we'll link to it on our website so you can see it or buy it yourself and just read it. It's just worth the discussion. So, and what you, as we walked in the door, Adar, you said you love this article.
I do. I love all of his work, but this article in particular really struck me. And the thing that I loved about it, Mark, and the thing that I love about all of his writing is the way that he connects the historical dots. We can go back 200 years and see that this country has been very consistent in a 4-to-1 ratio of black people as opposed to white people in prison. We can go back 200 years and see that black people have consistently been incarcerated for offenses that white people have not. And so his connection of that, his acknowledgement of that in his article, and his also connecting it to Daniel Monahan's acknowledging that, as Martin Luther King did, that something special had been done to the Negro, quote unquote, and so something special needs to be done for the Negro in terms of repair.
And I think that the repair part's the critical issue, and not just the noblesse oblige for that.
Right.
People, you know what I'm saying? That,
yes,
that was always,
absolutely.
So I'm curious what you both think about this. And Lenny, let me start with you. As I'm reading the article, I'm thinking about both Republicans and Democrats. Let me take us there just for a minute. That you see now, and I don't want to get into a whole discussion about the internal parts of the primary, but I'm just using this as an example from my perspective. You look at the Republican primary, where I think that you see the kind of undertone of racism in America bubbling up in that primary, both in the vote for Ben Carson and in the vote for Donald Trump. And I can get into analysis about that in a moment. But there's a hotbed of, I think, real deep racist feeling in the Republican Party that used to be in the Democratic Party. But in the Democratic Party, you have the same problems in a different way. As the article pointed out, you have Joe Biden and Clinton all talking about how we have to incarcerate people. Joe Biden saying that I want to incarcerate all the Willie Hortons. Right. And but are we now at a place with things like these articles where we can begin to attack that? I don't mean violently attack it. I mean attack it. The ideas, the ideology, the thinking of America, to begin to kind of weed that out. Because one of the things that struck me, Lenny, I said to my producers the other day, was the thing about young black Republicans I've met on this program in the last several years, you included, there's a deep race consciousness among young black Republicans, and you're in the middle of a party full of people who don't think like that. Not that all Democrats do either, to be clear. So what do you think about articles like this and discussions like this, what kind of impact it can have on American thinking?
I think the first thing that we have to look at is if you want to be a strong nation from a geopolitical and geoeconomic standpoint, you can't throw away human capital. You can't throw away people that can work, that could buy homes, that could buy cars, that could raise families, and that could strengthen their communities by way of their flaws. I mean, we have a guy that's at the top of the polls in the Republican Party that's supposed to be able to get our economy back on track because he's gone through multiple bankruptcies. That's the thinking right now. And he's at the top of the polls. So if that makes sense to us as Republicans by way of polling, why wouldn't it make sense for us to be able to say this individual paid their debt to society, they paid their debt to society. Now it is time for this American citizen who happens to be African American to bring them back into the fold, to help them have an opportunity to take care of themselves because they paid their debt. Now it's time for them to pay forward as well. If we take that standpoint, we can strengthen our citizenship, and that's how you make America strong in the 21st century, and you reverse the tide of this. If you don't look at them as citizens, and you look at them as hanger-ons or slackers or bums or once a criminal, always a criminal, number one, you're going to stay weak as a nation. Number two, you're going to stay vulnerable as a nation. And number three, you'll never get over this problem that we're talking about.
And I saw, and just in terms of the article, and how Adar, and both Adar and Lenny, but Adar, what you pull out of this article that speaks to some of that. I had a conversation the other day, which we'll be playing, I think, next week, with Dr. Hilary Beckles, who is a chancellor of the University of West Indies, and just finished one of his latest book is the British Debt to the Black World, or something. I forget the exact title, but it's like that. And he said that the struggle of the 21st century, the deep struggle of the century, is going to be reparations and understanding what that means and how we get the world to run, and we wrestle with it. And I think we're at the point we're trying to figure out how to get the world to wrestle with it. And I think when you have articles like this in The Atlantic and a publication that goes out to, quote-unquote, the mostly white intellectual class, but opens up the doors for conversation, that's why these articles, I think, are important.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And thank you, Lenny, because you have just articulated Associated Black Charities more in the middle position on human capital, that we have to invest in it in order to increase our economic viability. But you know what's so interesting, Mark, and you brought up the candidate, so let me continue to go there. Mm-mm. That even in even with the Monahan report, he brought up the impact of institutional and structural racism before succumbing to it, before succumbing to the microaggressions, before succumbing to the stereotyping, before succumbing to everything that we know that society continues to succumb to when talking about African-American people. So it will be interesting to see whether or how people will take the article, whether they will agree, but then fall back into their privileged beliefs of blaming the victim, if you will, or blaming the people who are impacted by institutional and structural racism, or whether they will actually wrestle with it with some bit of integrity, historical integrity, personal integrity, and societal integrity.
So tell us where you would both take this discussion. I mean, how would you take this discussion to the majority of people in your Republican Party and conservative America that see this entire notion of the link between our founding fathers and democracy and America now at the heart of racism and discussing reparations? How do you begin that conversation, Lenny, in that world, in your world?
I think that the way I would have this conversation is I would look at individuals. I did this on a campaign trail. I said two different things. Number one, if you're not for reparations, then we have to provide a pathway that allows individuals to be able to take care of themselves. We have to make sure that once people pay their debt to society, that they're made whole as American citizens and they're embraced as American citizens. And they get a renewed opportunity to understand what being an American citizen means. More often than not, when you're talking about an African American in inner city America, growing up in some of these situations that we've read about in many articles, such as this excellent article that we're talking about today, by the time they come out of jail at 30, they have an education about life and about society that they did not get in school at 15 years old. So now that we have this renewed individual looking for a second chance, we have to embrace them as such. We have to pivot and say, okay, number one, if you're against government programs, including, let's say, affirmative action, how in the world do you break the generation of poverty? How do you break the cycle that keep people locked away like this and keep us weak and vulnerable throughout America? You have to be able to provide some type of doorway for people to run through, because as we have seen, when people are given an opportunity, they will pull themselves up by their bootstraps, whether they're coming from inner city Pittsburgh or Baltimore all the way through to South Central Los Angeles and every point in between. That's number one. The other thing that I would look at is say, listen, you want to go against illegal immigration. If you can take the xenophobia out of your illegal immigration argument and replace it with, we have a population of American citizens that need the jobs that those that are here illegally, those that are here in an undocumented fashion, are taking everything from the jobs in the fields to construction to things along those lines. If we say we have to take care of these renewed American citizens first before we are really concerned about sanctuary cities and making sure people can stay there and work there, that could be an argument that would win over more Americans without being xenophobic.
I agree with that, and I would also expand broader, because this is not a poverty conversation. This is a conversation about the constructed concept of whiteness and the ways in which that incentivizes and advantages some people and disadvantages others. So I think that I would start with what type of world do we want for this 21st century? And what does it take for us to get there? Because when we see a James Blake who's standing in front of a hotel, clearly a man of means, minding his own business and getting body tackled by police, when we see a black doctor who was arrested along with her husband for a traffic stop when they were minding their own business, this is not just about incarcerated people. It is not just about poor black people. It is about these concepts that we do not want to struggle with.
It is, but I think that it, I guess one of the things that how can I put this? If this conversation is going to get broadened in America, we have to find a language and a way to do it, or it's never going to change. And I would push back a little. I think it is about poverty in many ways. Not completely, but poverty is a huge part of this issue. Half the city of Baltimore lives in poverty. That's the half of the city in Baltimore that goes to jail. That's the half of the city of Baltimore that's homeless. That's the half of the city of Baltimore that cannot find a job that pays living wage, that has to work three jobs just to take care of their children who they cannot supervise when they're in school because they're working so hard.
So,
and those kids are the ones who are going to jail because they're poor and because they're black.
So Mark, I'm not saying that poverty is not part of the equation. What I'm saying is that it is not all of the equation. We have seen college students who have been taken down by police and their futures ruined because they got caught up in a system by virtue of their blackness, not by virtue of their class.
So it's not just
a poverty conversation. I'm not saying that poverty has no place in the equation. I'm saying that it is not all of the equation.
It's not. But if you say one out of three black American men will have to face the judicial system in this America in some way in the course of their lives, and then if you parse that out by class, mm-hmm. it's more like 7 out of 10, I mean. So that's why I'm saying that poverty does have a huge piece to play in this. I think that's part of the recognition, part of the whole notion that people I've talked to, whether it's Coates or whether it's Bickles and other people talking about reparations, is the money that has to be invested economically to begin to change the course of events so you can also fight and deal with the racism that's created this culture in the first place.
And again, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying that it is not the whole picture. That's all I'm saying.
Lenny? You still there, Lenny? Go ahead.
Yeah, I am. It's the major chunk of the picture. And when you start talking about the economic disparities, you start talking about the education disparities, you start talking about the employment disparities, it's based the wrong race, and all of these things are intermingled in far too much of a way than we should be seeing in 2015 after the Civil Rights Movement, after the Great Society Movement and things along those lines. So I think that when you talk about these issues, you get a bigger bang for the buck combining them initially. Now, I agree with her. It should not be totally. But initially, it needs to be, because those are the individuals that end up staying locked in these cycles of poverty. Those are the individuals that continue to stay locked in the cycles of incarceration. So if you don't go break those cycles first, if you don't say, if you pay your debt to society, our goal now is to pay forward so that nobody else in your family ever goes to jail. Again, for 4, 5, 6 generations. And although that might sound grandiose, that has to be a goal. I look back at my dad. He never went to jail, but he was only a high school graduate, and he barely got out of high school. But he was determined to have 3 college graduates and make sure that everybody in his line moving forward never had anything less than an undergraduate degree, and he made that so. We have to take the same type of focus as an American society, not just as African Americans. This is an American problem, and if we're going to be safe internationally when it comes to illegal immigration and things along the lines of domestic terrorism, all the way through to being number one as a as an economic market moving through the rest of the century, we have to do this together.
Though I think there's a very there's a danger of, at least I, well, we might disagree, Lynn, I think there's a real danger of linking people coming to this country through whatever border it is and being undocumented and their separation from race in America, because you're seeing right now the switch of Asian Americans, Latino Americans who might have been Republicans moving the other way because they're feeling not wanted by anybody else. And that's a big part of our conversation. Let's not do that today. Mm-hmm. But so I want to get back to this article for a moment and how this article may affect our national discussion. And how it should affect our national discussion, how it allows the debates you and I are having right now, Doris. I don't think mm-hmm. we really disagree on it fundamentally here, but but create these discussions. That's what we have to do.
Mm-hmm. So I hope that, regardless of how the discussion shows up, that it does not show up as an either or discussion, but as an and discussion.
Yep, yep, yep.
That there are a variety of ways in which we need to address and attack what is happening in society and those and assist those people, remove those barriers that directly impact people. We tend to get into an either or. We have to do one or the other. We have to do this or that. That's not the case. And I hope that, again, however it's used, it will not be used to send us just down one track when we know that this is a holistic issue and we have to use a lot of tracks.
And your thoughts, 410-319-8888. I know you haven't all read the article yet. You heard the conversation with Ta-Nehisi. You hear this conversation here. I want to hear your ideas and thoughts on this. How does it play out in this mayoral election that we're facing here in Baltimore City? That's this election period we're having across the state of Maryland and across the country for Senate, for Congress, for your city council races across America. How does it affect that? I mean, 410-319-8888. And I think it does affect it because, you know, when you look at the participation of votes in the last two presidential cycles, communities of color and young people, their participation was way up. Part of the reason it was up was because of issues of race, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons things exploded. So that's why I'm saying things like the articles like this at this moment leave us an opportunity to create an intense internal American discussion about who we are and where we're going. Mm-hmm. That hasn't taken place before.
Absolutely. And Black Lives Matter is contributing to that conversation. You know, it will be interesting, Mark, to see how people fall in terms of the issue of accountability. We know that there have been politicians here who have contributed and supported the issue of mass incarceration. Will that become now an issue during a campaign? Will people be held accountable for what they've said, for what they did in terms of policy? Will other people who are running be willing to raise these issues on the campaign trail, or will they stay away from it because they feel that they will lose some of their base? Those choices and those decisions will let us know how we are moving as a country and whether this has any impact at all.
Let me I'll go over the phones, come right back to Lenny, and read the piece Judith just emailed in that incarceration is the only exception to the 13th Amendment. Corporations are seeking the wages on showing growth in prison labor, undercutting jobs and wages for all Americans. And Clarence emailed in, America epitomizes the idea of one part of humanity being less than and not equal to another. Society has and will manifest by the ruling class a structure and controlling elements to support that idea. This is why my black life doesn't matter. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Andrew, you're on the air. Andrew, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. I'd just like to state that you all have a great spirit about what you do, but you need to look at things in a larger way. We're all in a prison down here in a way because we're not given the knowledge and the nutrition to develop what's commonly called the third eye or the pineal gland, which is a connection with our spirit. And so we're all enslaved down here. And the idea that the entities that are running our world have human values is erroneous. You have to deal with entities that are running a world that are not really human. And to expect them to have human values is erroneous. But to be given the knowledge that Christ had, that he got from the Egyptians, to develop the pineal gland is our connection with our spirit. And that's the only way to escape the slavery that we're all in down here, sir.
I appreciate the call and the thoughts, Andrew. And I think that we all are in slavery. I agree. And I think the idea is that one of the things that's, and I take it in a different way, but I think one of the ways that movements in this country for change have always been divided is people being, when that bridge is made, that bridge is blown up because people are too afraid of the power if that bridge is made, which is what killed movements in the past, I think. Let's go to Rhonda on line one. Rhonda, welcome.
Yes, good morning. You know, I listen to your show from time to time, and I hear a lot of discussions, you know, talking. All we're doing is talking. People need to step out on faith and do something. I'm a single parent. I currently had both my sons were incarcerated, and they were both college students. One was an engineering major and the other a business major.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the business major one just recently was released last month. As soon as he got out, a couple of days later, my oldest son, who I had reported missing to the police because I did not know where he was, haven't heard, seen nothing, and the detectives from Virginia Beach called me and tell me they found him. He's in custody there. And so now I find out he's not at the jail this week. The judge ordered him to be evaluated for mental competency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just me about, you know, trying to do all this, trying to find out what's going on. I come from a large family, but they don't speak. They don't communicate. I just moved here to Maryland. I've been here 2 years. Even when I was back in Virginia, I had no communication or contact with them, and it wasn't because of me. So the basis, what I'm saying is people need to stop talking about what the government isn't doing. All this foolishness is our problem, Black Americans. We have to lift up one another and help and support one another. If we don't, we're not going to have anything. That's just how it is.
Rhonda, thank you so much for your thoughts. Sorry for all you're going through.
Yeah, I so feel for you, sister. And there are so many people who are struggling with it. With those same issues, and my prayers are with you. You know, again, I think that it is an and, not an either or. There is much being done. A lot of what is being done, we don't talk about. It does not get press because it is not about blood and gore and people going after each other. The media is never there when they're are positive activities going on in communities, but they sure are there when there is negative going on in communities. So a lot of what's happening, we don't hear. And the thing, Mark, is that, yes, we all struggle with personal hurts. We all struggle with personal circumstances, but policy can either help us overcome those or keep us mired in those. And that is why policy is so important. And policy, historical policy, has worked against communities of color. And we have to recognize that. We have to recognize what remedies there have been put in place or have been attempted to be put in place. And we have to continue to move forward with policy, even as we deal with those happenings in our own lives.
Lenny, you want to jump in before we go back to the phones?
I think she's 100% correct. I think that's one of the things that we failed at. We have not looked at policy initiatives. We have looked at who we can get in office, not what we can get done once we have people in office. We have seen the finish line as being election day and inauguration day. And I'm not saying necessarily President Obama. There have been governors. There have been city councilmen. There have been mayors. If the finish line is inauguration day for those elected officials and not the policy initiatives that get Americans across the finish line, we fail. We have to recalibrate that.
Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. Walter, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, my brother and sister. I really want to start with this foolishness that came out of Huckabee's mouth concerning the Dred Scott decision. You guys
oh, right.
remember that? He said that that's still a law of the land, which is why we're in the condition that we are. So many people fail to understand this conservative essence of America, which is racism and contempt, as the earlier callers have said, for our humanity. I beg you to answer this one question. How in the heck can we support a Uncle Ben Carson who has no consciousness on the history of himself, let alone this country? I beg you guys to help me understand how this clown can be so high in the ratings amongst those white conservatives who don't want to change this system of unequal justice, unequal income, or any doggone thing else. I love you guys, and thanks for a great show today.
Thank you, Walter. Let me just say before we turn to my guest here that to be clear about what Huckabee said. Huckabee was using the Dred Scott decision to justify his stance against people being pro-choice, against the right to a woman to choose. That's what he was making that leap. But I think that's one of the things that many people are doing now. They're trying to, which to me, this is what happens. I think it shows the great contradictions in our country, that politicians are always playing the gambit of holding up pieces of history that have to do with race. Mm-hmm. Without wanting to deal with race and racism in our society. Mm-hmm. You know,
isn't that ironic?
I mean, that's whether it's Huckabee doing this or people are saying this is what MLK would have done or
right. It's another example of exploitation. But another thing inherent in Huckabee's remarks and in Monahan's report, too, which we really haven't touched on here, is the patriarchal bent of it all. Which was so mind-blowing because we tend to forget or to dismiss that or to subsume patriarchy in conversations of race, but his report definitely went there. And I would love for any official or anybody wanting to run for elected office that before they could announce their candidacy, they have to take a basic history test that is not like the history that we learn in school, but is the real deal history, which doesn't necessarily support the mythological national narrative.
Well, that's one of the things we tried to do today in history, which we'll come back to as soon as we get some more money to finish it and come back to it. But I want to thank the two of you. It's always great to have you on the air. Lenny McAllister, really glad to have you back on the show. I heard my producer saying you'd like to find a way to come in the studio live, which we would love. It'd be my treat to take you to dinner, so hope you can make it down here.
I will definitely do that soon, Mark. God bless you. Thanks for always having me. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate you. And Adara Yera, always good to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for what you do and coming in and allowing us to have our friendly banter back and forth all the time.
I always look forward to it.
Me
Thank
too.
You, Mark.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a very brief break. You can all read The Black Family and the Mass and the Age of Mass Incarceration by Ta-Nehisi Coates in the October issue of Atlantic Magazine on Atlantic.com. We'll also link to the article on our website at steinershow.org. We've got to take a break here. When we come back, I'll be talking with Stanley Nelson, documentary filmmaker, award-winning documentary filmmaker, about his new film, The Black Panthers, The Vanguard of the Revolution, which is opening in theaters. Stay with us. We'll be right back.